Now,
that,
what happened with the demonstration? Now, outside, people were putting crepe paper.
As they were coming into the hall. This is in the ante, you know, the entrance, inside the building. Oh, everybody was putting their arm out. Oh, they were very proud. Men, too. Everybody was very proud to do that. And I didn't even capitalize on that. I am... The majority, yeah. There were a few people, I guess, who went in another gate. They had, the girls had their table all set up, the one main gate.
And what were they being told when they were coming in
honor? This is in honor of the Women's Brigade of 37. And I didn't explain that demonstration. I was having difficulty just existing up there. Just going through the act, I never had so much trouble. It's a very difficult thing when your heart slips out of gear. You're absolutely discombobulated. It's very disconcerting. And it was too much strain, too much pressure from all the days before, and I never want to be in that position again. I never do. If I know now because of my physical condition, if I go again, I'll have to have somebody go with me and just say, I'm sorry, but she's lying down. I'm sorry, because I can't say that myself. If it's some dear friend that I want to talk to or see, I naturally give them the time.
Well, you know, tell me about the demonstration between the banners.
I can't remember what they said. I can get that information for you. This is when I was really quite, you know, I told you an hour before. I remember them, and I remember pointing up to them when the cameras were on them, the television cameras, and the others. I pointed up the banners so everybody would read them in the balcony.
Now, was this while you were speaking, or was this earlier?
Earlier, so that we could get a woman speaker. And the chant was from this big section of women and some men. The UAW needs an ERA, Equal Rights Amendment, you see. The UAW needs an ERA, and then we said, we want our speaker. This is what the women were saying, and I was just about passing out at that point. So I don't remember the slogans on the banner. This is something that you'll have to experience in order to know what it's like to go through a period where you're just clinging to consciousness almost. So yeah. We had one big section in the front of the hall that were women and their husbands and sympathizers. Then we had another one up in the balcony. Now, this was not a well-attended meeting. The publicity was very poor. The program was very unappealing. And Ted Kennedy didn't have the draw that they thought he would have. And then there wasn't enough publicity that Victor Reuther was going to be on it. It just was badly mangled by the regional office. Previously, you know, on something like this, it would have been much better attended. I would say there would be about 1,000 people, I guess, would be. I don't know.
How large would the supporters group?
I think we must have had probably a good 25 to 30% of the audience.
Mm.
And when they started chanting, this is when Woodcock got worried. And I had such an ideal situation. I had so many supporters down there who were really so opposed to Woodcock's position. And I'm sure that they must have been disappointed. And if I hadn't had that terrible dichotomy in my head there, thinking, do I have the right to involve? You know, they came off on the question of representation. Do I have the right to involve them in an international question? I couldn't get over that for a couple of weeks, you know.
What did Victor Reuther seem to react to the whole thing when the chanting started and when he spoke? Was he still around?
He was up on the platform, just sitting there quietly. And I had two of the presidents up there that were just absolutely, the one went down in his wheelchair, and this has to be a special car and everything else to the regional office. To remind the regional director, they had voted to invite me in there, and they had voted to pay my transportation, and it had better be paid. I had presidents, I had the audience. If I had only been in condition, and I got up there, and I didn't even explain to them why it was necessary to have all this disruption, because we did disrupt the meeting, and I was so sorry. And Joyce was sitting next to me too, and there's just a period where you can't explain what's happening to you, and you go up and you go through the the act. But the rest of it was very successful, and I felt a little bit better when I devised a way of trying to get this to a much wider audience, and I think maybe I'll be able to do that at the convention in May.
Oh, you're going to go back again?
In May, it's going to be out here in Los Angeles.
Oh, it's a big
the national convention, uh-huh. Yeah. There is a petition that's being circulated in Flint right now by all of those old-time participants in the 1937 strike on the whole business of our anniversary and what it means to us and not celebrating it with a corporation again. At least that part of it can be made clear. And I'm very sorry that the regional director who comes, and if I had a chance at the convention, I would like to say that my mother, for one period, for a short period, worked in AC spark plug company. That is probably the biggest. I've got to check this out with the archives. I think it hires more women than any other plant. It's always had a majority of women. My mother worked in that. I am now going to be 64 years old in April. I'm going to be 64 years old. My mother worked in there before that. The union's been in there for 40 years. Ever since the union has been in there, the officials of that union, their salary has been paid over half of it by women. And never has there been any specific proposals for the betterment of women coming out of that region or out of that local or from that regional director who comes from that local of women. And this is what I'd like to say. I'd like to say that we've got to have special legislation. I remember somewhere in my speech I spoke about care centers for women and a couple of other things to remedy the condition of women. I can't even remember that what I said. But I would like to, if I speak at the convention, I would like to remedy some of that.
You know what?
I'm hopeful that I'll be able to.
How many of the supporters were women who, and men supporting the position on women, and how many of them do you think were rank and file militants who viewed you as representing their position on the GM, on the collusion with GM? Do you think that they were responding to the women's issue, or were they responding to the statements you had made?
I think that they were responding to both. In Flint, I am a symbol of the women at 37, but they were all of these people, these old-timers, were in agreement with that celebration, against the celebration down in Detroit. Every one of them that I spoke to, I don't know of any. Now, Victor Reuther changed his mind, but he didn't raise it there. Woodcock certainly did not raise it. And if I had said, I preceded Woodcock, and if I had said, I did not understand why we were not on the picket lines where we belong, with our brothers who are being, who are fighting against the injustices of General Motors, and out on, without a paycheck, out on the picket lines, on this date. Why aren't we not with them, you know? And perhaps Brother Woodcock can explain this to us. Chevrolet Gear and Axle, this is where we had this difficulty in organizing Saginaw and nearly lost our lives, some of us, you know, trying to do it, is one that is slated to be pulled out and taken down into Alabama. Anderson, Indiana, where Victor Reuther and his wife, and we had great caravans sent down there to organize it, has been pulled out, went to Meridian, Mississippi. And they have been losing one election after another. Now, one of them, they just recently won. Just squeaked through. And there is no possible rationalization in my mind that I should have said, perhaps Brother Woodcock can give us some, you know, some rationalization for this kind of activity. Why was it that we had to sit down with the corporation that's still penalizing and persecuting workers inside of those plants? And I would have had the sympathy of everybody in there. It's an opportunity that comes once in a lifetime sometimes, except, of course, if there can be a resolution into the National Convention, which is being handled in Flint. And Flint, it was, you know, at the time of the strike, we had 15 plants all across the nation, 17 plants, 17 of it, yeah, and five of them were in Flint. So the birth of that union really was in Flint, Michigan, and those workers in Flint who participated in that take up a petition protesting this kind of giving away of their anniversary. it probably will mean a great deal.
So there's going to be resolution of this on the floor of the convention, in other words.
Yeah. It's in the process now. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that in
I hope it'll be reported out. I think it will.
Do you think that taking all of the locals does not that kind of attitude anymore?
I don't believe there's that kind of attitude, but I believe that if Emil Macy and Doug Fraser, who did not attend that banquet, if they lend their support, that it can pass. You know, the UAW is like most unions now. It's run pretty much on top. Right now, he doesn't know about it. It's something that has got to be done on a grassroots scale and then presented into the conventions credential or resolutions committee, and then contact the people and ask them to support it. It's the petition to go along with it, I think, is an important thing. And even if it doesn't pass the floor of the convention, it will appear in some of the union papers, you know. So,
what meeting the 11th and 10th itself. When you say the supporters, you had a section in the front of supporters in the balcony. Were these people that had been contacted ahead and you had left an area and told them where to sit?
Yes, they had allotted three rolls for us to begin with. And I walked up and just took their marker, moved it back about six rolls. And then they removed all markers because they didn't want to see how many people had red armbands and were sitting up in our section who were supporting us. And this angered me, too. Yes, we're telling them where to go on. And this distressed me. I had a number of altercations with some of the people, and everybody kept saying, watch out for her, let her go, you know, and do what she says. One man at the door was barring our people and telling them they couldn't go up into that section. And I went, he was a former international representative, and I'm black. Isn't that too bad? And I went up to him and I said, Earl Crompton, get off this doorway, and I mean now. I think that's what upset me. Because nobody else, everybody is afraid in these days to say anything. And so one of the international representatives came up and said, Earl, go. Don't disagree. We're not going to have any disagreements here. And so then the people were allowed to come into the thing. And a couple of things, and this little altercation, not altercation, but this little thing with Fania Ruther wanting to be so good and so nice. These things were very, very hard on a person who was, you know, taking a lot of strain anyway. I'm not trying to put up any excuse except that it's a terrible thing for a person to get to the stage where your health can inhibit you to that point. In the strike, remember, I was very weak. I had tuberculosis. I was not in good health. But I was able to continue on anyway and then collapsed at the end of it and went to the sanatorium. But with a heart condition, you collapse right then and there on the spot. It's much harder. I never want to be in a position where I am so inhibited by health. I mean, without somebody to help me hold back, I don't have any governor on me. Yeah, and they were, the brigade women are themselves, you know, pretty old, and Nellie Besson has a heart condition. She was very excited, and she went up and sat down quietly, like I would like to have done, or I didn't have enough sense to do, I don't know.
Did you wear your webcam on that occasion, too, or only when you spoke before you took the team?
No, I wore it there, and the red armband. And Nellie Besson and wore her Nellie Besson wore her red beret and armbands. They found one. And then Mary Handa made a couple of armbands for Nellie and herself and one other woman. I think there were four of us with the berets and armbands, the original ones. The others had these little crepe paper red bands around them. And if we had had more time, now remember this was done in hours, this whole demonstration. And it was done at night, and then there were television crewmen coming into the place where I was staying, taking up, you know, it takes a lot of time to set up cameras and equipment and everything else. taking up hours, and then I would get a call coming through, and it'd have to be canceled out, and I'd have to try to get back to the young women. And it was done in such a matter of compressed time. There's so many other things coming in. It was not well organized, but it was very effective. If I had gotten up and played my role as it should have been played, explained the demonstration, explained the despicable role of the regional director and his relationship to the whole question of women, and won the audience over and told them that he says we old-timers can get together and reminisce, which was an actual quote of his, I would have won the whole thing over. I would have explained it. I know the press, and if I'd asked Leonard Woodcock to explain the whole thing, I know the press would have had a very good story. I wrote and told the News and Letters sent me a little copy of something they wrote up, and I wrote back and said, Aldo, you would have had a much better story if this hadn't happened to me, if I hadn't physically. You just don't think things through. And I'm sure that now I wouldn't have minded if I... It's after all, the demonstration on their part was for my right to speak my opinions, but I didn't rationalize it that way. I thought I would be involving them. And Flint is a very... It's still a company town. And what you involve people in, that big UAW that has a tremendous force in that town, you know, you're involving their very livelihood. Mm-hmm. Barbara Jennings is a librarian there in one of the libraries, I don't remember which one, and she's affiliated with the Unitarian Church, Baker Business University Library. And these things pressed in on me, the great repression these women are under, and they were telling me their grievances every time they were with me. And I'm telling you, their grievances were such that they're almost intolerable. I remember the attitude in the old days, but it seems to be so much better organized now by these men who are in control of the union. In the AC local, a woman has never been more than secretary of the local, and they're a majority of that plant over all these years. Clue women primarily. Yes.
Were there young? Did you get any?
Yes, all young.
Response from local members, young women that you had never had any contact with before? Did many of them?
Not many of them turned out. Only the Clue people. Not many young people were there.
So the women that were there, except for the contingent that basically came prepared for asking the men, the wives of the men who were attending that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But there were not very many shop workers there. There were some black women who came up, and I used to be with them in the NAACP. And that's another group that I worked with there. And they threw their arms around me. Now, those were shop workers. And all of the blacks told me that they hated the attitude toward women. And one militant union man who finally, because he was black and wanted to be upgraded in the tool and die department, skilled trades, called me to tell me he's now on supervision. And when it came to the affirmative action program, implementing it in the shop for women and for minorities, that he had more trouble with the union than he did with supervision. And he said, especially, you won't believe it, but especially when it comes to women, no matter what color they are. And I got these complaints from all over. Not one decent reaction about the attitude of the union officials to women. Mm-hmm. The best locals are Fisher 2 and Fisher. Fisher 1 now has joined in this group of three locals and Chevrolet. And that's primarily because of my reminding them and the associations that I've had with them. But when it comes to translating it, there's just...
There's no woman's caucus.
No woman's caucus and no nothing. And even the people on the top international that are supposed to be representing women, so far as I have seen, nothing that gives any aid to any woman down there, in the shops, in the ranks, in Detroit also. It takes an unusual... What happened? She asked each and every one of them to just get up and explain why they thought a woman should be represented on the Sunday program. And And they said, well, Mary Honda, will you tell us about how you happened to be in the Women's Emergency Brigade? And so she gave her role about what happened then. And then she had Barbara Jennings representing the National Organization for Women. And she said, we women have got to stick together. And when they take one of our leading women who helped build a union in the city and they don't permit her to speak and so on, and also Sherry. Sherry spoke for CLU, and she was absolutely tremendous, absolutely tremendous. She said, we are holding our hands out to you, brother workers in the plants, in the factories. We want you to do the same for us. I remember that phrase in her little interview. And then the shop of all of us, Nellie and another black factory worker from Turnstead. Now, a difficulty and clue there. I think they only have 5 or 6 members, or at the most maybe 10 on paper in Flint. They come from Turnstead, they come from AC, they come from Chevrolet, and when they get together, their problems are nowhere near related. Even their general problems are so hard to put through different administrations that each and every one of them feel like, well, they have. They've got a whole big bureaucracy on top of their one little lonely head in that particular local. No, not in Flint. Not in Flint. If I were there, I know that I could get the help of many old militants who have come along with the times, you know. Maybe they were not even so pro-lib then, but they've come along with the times. And now they recognize the necessity of our battle being won, that it's in the same category as every other struggle for equality. And I know that with those people and with the young women, that I could give that leadership there something to think about. But I, unfortunately, you can't do everything that you want to. No. That's the big handicap. Yeah. Mm-hmm.